fucking master!
There's so many.
The last time we were here, they were still deep inside the buildings. Then I guess enough people came through looking for the QZ. We went inside seeking shelter. And that's how they get more and more of the city, bit by bit, year after year.
They're connected.
More than you know. The fungus also grows underground. Long fibers like wires, some of them stretching over a mile. You step on a patch of cordyceps in one place, and you can wake a dozen infected from somewhere else. Now they know where you are, now they come. You're not immune from being ripped apart. You understand? It's important. I'm trying to keep you alive.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Brickmasters Podcast, a recap show for the HBO series The Last of Us. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth, and with me as always is my wonderful co-host, media studies professor, Dr. Veronica Paredes. How the hell are you, Veronica?
Chris, I'm doing well. Glad to be here. We're going to talk about the clickers. We're going to talk about Last of Us, big reveals. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Despite the drama, the mini drama I explained to you before we hit record, I'm doing all right. And this episode was really good. I really enjoyed it. I love the changes that they made. I was not mad at them at all. I'm sold on Bella Ramsey with every scene that she's in. Like, I was skeptical at first. I was cautiously optimistic about her, but I will say that overall, I love the episode. I love the cold open. Neil and Craig are just not fucking around with these cold opens. And I love how they're establishing the world that we're in. Because it wasn't in the game. Like the theories and all this was not in the game. You're just literally thrown into it after the prologue that we discussed last week. And you're just kind of in it. There's really no explanation. So I love the fact that they're doing this with the show. And it's very palpable. Especially with the encounters with the infected. They're very dark and scary. What did you think?
I think they're broadening the world, right, with these cold opens. And it's really solidifying its kind of role or its status or its transformation into being a TV show, right?
Yeah.
And we talked about how we're both listening to the official podcast and to hear Craig Mazin. Oh gosh,
that sounds right.
Mazin.
I think it's Mazin.
Mazin, and how he is borrowing from or thinking about how Vince Gilligan constructs those cold opens for Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. I definitely see that. And how you can have the viewer be really confused in the beginning and they'll kind of forgive that and be along for the ride as long as you get to like the show titles and then it makes a little bit more sense. But yeah, I thought that there was a lot added given it's 2 days before infection day with the cold open, right? So yeah, I enjoyed that. I like the internationalizing or like the broader perspective that those bits give to the show.
Yeah, that's a great comparison. Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. I didn't even think of that. I was honestly just thinking about because of the way that they're building the world. And one of the things that like we talked about last week, I think it's a story that's been told before, but it's the way in which they're telling the story. And so I think this is like top tier premium TV. Yeah. And it's kind of what Lost was trying to do. If they knew what they really wanted to do with Lost, Lost would have been there. When they were on point with those first two seasons, as far as like building the characters were great on that show. And that was the show's saving grace. It made me think of that. Like it made me think about, and I think we're going to get to more of that in episode 3 And then from here on out through the rest of the season, we'll probably get more flashbacks. That's what I'm predicting. I don't know that for a fact, but I really, that is a great comparison. It's just like these pitch perfect cold opens that are going to relate in some way or fashion. And the way they tie things in together is just, yeah, it's just great. So do you want to let's just get into it.
Let's get into it.
Oh, before we do, I wanted to say, and I don't know how we didn't go in depth with this, but I think this serves you before we get to the cold open. I'm really sold on the tendrils because the tendrils were not in the video game. And
right,
it was the spores, and it's way more cinematic and it's scarier. And it's a lot creepier. So, all right, let's get into this cold open. Jakarta, Indonesia, September 24th, 2003. There's a restaurant. These military soldiers come in and take this woman out. We don't know who she is yet. And she's while she's eating lunch, and they take her off into a car. She asks if she's committed a crime. Do you have the right person? They're like, no, we know who you are. And we come to find out it's Professor Abu Reina of mycology, which is the study of fungi. They take her to this lab and they ask her to examine a specimen. And before she gets to sit down and look at the specimen, another scientist says, well, you might want to. And they say, no. The soldier says, no, we just want her opinion. We don't want you to cloud her thoughts. We want her to look at this. So she's in this lab. She identifies the specimen as Ophiocordyceps, I believe, something like that. And she says cordyceps cannot survive in humans. And that's basically what the scientist said in that Dick Cavett like ABC show in the first episode. But around that time, they did say if it gets hotter, if we start to have global warming, you're going to have this happen. Like these humans can get taken over. They can get infected by the fungi. And so we find out that the sample was taken from a human. They send her into an examination room. She's suited and booted. You call that PPE, right?
What do you call it? PPE. Yeah.
Extreme PPE.
It's like science lab, contagion. This is like a hazmat almost.
Yes.
Even.
Yes, for real. Yeah. And so there's a cadaver, a woman laying on the table naked. HBO got to show some mind naked. And the first thing you see is a bullet's in her head. And the officer says, no. Look at her left leg. And it looks like she's been bitten. And she makes this incision. And you see in her, like, kind of like her calf, like her side of her leg, shin or whatever. And we see the fungi start to come out. And it's like you pull out these tendrils that start to move and grow. And she gets freaked out. She drops it and just walks out of the room, like leaves the room, hurriedly leaves the room. And we cut to a lounge area where the officer gives her some tea. And she asks the officer, when did this happen? She says, when did this happen? She says, he says, about 30 hours ago at a flour and grain factory on the west side of the city. So this is basically, I don't know if you saw this on YouTube, but there was this theory running around about the flour theory and all this stuff was going on. And people were absolutely right. And then I don't know if it was from the podcast, from the official podcast, but Craig Mazin said he literally said there's breadcrumbs that lead you to deducing how this stuff happened. So it is a theory. So like in the first episode, the Adlers were eating biscuits. Joel and Sarah turned them down. They were baking cookies over there. Sarah didn't have any. And earlier at breakfast, Joel and Sarah didn't have any pancakes, so they didn't make it. That comes from flour. Tommy didn't have any. So he was eating chicken wings, I think. So breakfast of champions. I'm not mad at it. So yeah. it's literally everybody who had that theory was right. And she says, you know, it's at a grain factory. She says it's a perfect substrate, and a substrate is, I have the definition here, an underlying substance or layer, the surface or material on or from which an organism lives, grows, or obtains its nourishment. Brachiopods attached to the substrate by a stalk, the substance on which an enzyme acts. So it's perfect for that infection.
Breeding ground. Yeah.
So an organism can thrive there. So we just talked about Joel on saying he was on Atkins, no biscuits, no breads and grains.
Yeah, I missed that.
So that's that. What did you think? Oh, wait, no, we're not there yet. Okay. And he goes on to tell her it was a normal woman who suddenly became violent. We've heard that before. She attacked four coworkers and bit three of them. They locked her in a bathroom. The police came. She tried to attack them. Then they shot her in the head. And then she says, what happened to the people she bit? They were observed a few hours later. It became necessary according to procedure to execute them. Of course. And then she says, she asks, who bit her? They don't know. They're still out there. She says, are there other workers missing? He says, about 14. And they brought her there to help them create a vaccine. And she says, look, I spent my entire life studying these things. There's no medicine and no vaccine. That's what those scientists said in 1968. And this is fast forward to 2003. Still no vaccine for that. And he says, so what do we do? She says, bomb this city and everyone in it. She asks if someone can drive. She just asks if somebody can drive her home so she can be with her family. So it's pretty much over. Everybody's fucked. And then we get, that's the cold open. Cue the opening hymn. Yeah. The opening hymn. what did you think about this cold open?
Yeah, I thought it was really effective. Even thinking about it now with the, just the way that the danger and the looming kind of foreboding about this coming is performed by this doctor. I was going to look up who this doctor was played by.
Oh.
But just the way that she's able to convey understanding the situation very quickly and then also
Christine Hakim.
Yeah, she was great.
Yeah.
That moment when she's kind of the military officer says something about there's 15 or 14 workers that are on the loose, basically, that didn't attend or that may be infected, that are in the city that they didn't contain, and her fear of that, and she's shaking. Just the way that that performance is just really, there wasn't a lot of time with this character, and yet right. It's like really well done. So I thought it was like for as far as these cold opens, these little vignettes that show the before time.
Yeah.
Really great. It was really well done.
Yeah, I really liked it. And again, it just set the table for everything that happens in this episode with regards to the infected. Because this is really about, this episode is about the infected, really.
Right.
So the opening, after the cold open, we get an overhead shot of Ellie sleeping in the fetal position like a baby. In the grass where there's things that are growing and blossoming. There's a butterfly flying around her, which is maybe possibly a symbol of hope for humanity, rebirth, metamorphosis. All that good stuff. And it, out of all the bleakness that you see and that we've seen in the first couple of episodes, you see this, like, you see the greenery, her laying down in the greenery. Yeah, like a fetus. And then she wakes up and then it's just a shot of Joel and Tess with the gun trained on her, just trying to see if she turned. And she wakes up. Go ahead.
I don't know if this came. Was this in the video game?
No, in the video game, it was a whole night of, like,
right,
after you battling. Find, like, you killed, you find out that Ellie's immune. And then you still go through the rest of the night, like trying to get to the state house. Like they actually, we could skip a little bit. Yeah, there's a whole nother, whole, like quite a few sequences before you get to like that. Like that part, this scene isn't in the video game.
I thought it was a pretty, I mean, it was a bit, it's funny, right?
Yeah.
It's like very bucolic and kind of idyllic. This sleeping babe child and the new, like you're saying, new life springing forward. And then just like these kind of shady characters waiting in the shadows.
I like that you said that because I'm going to get to that too. I want your thoughts on this. So, you know, Joel's like, show us your arm. And Ellie basically knows the drill because Marlene had her chained up and all that. So it's like, gosh, she's like kind of like this again. And so Ellie says, if we're out in the open city, why are we being swarmed? Joel said, don't worry about it. Joel and Tess, they question Ellie about, you know, what Marlene was doing with her. And she was basically telling them she's getting tested every day to see if she was sick. She asked to go to the bathroom. Tess throws a magazine at her and tells her to tear out a few pages so she can wipe. And Ellie says, it's not going to be anything bad in here. Joel said, just you. Like, and it's just quick because, you know, Joel's like still like, I think you're going to turn, you know, like I'm going to shoot your ass. Mm-hmm. And it's still like they still find the humor in these dark times. And I love that because that's the humor is still in these games. I remember doing a play one time about these people who were exonerated from death row. And mm-hmm. it was a heavy play, but we still, our director wanted us, shout out to Greg Kolak. He wanted us to like find the levity. Like there's still those moments that you have levity. And I think they do this really well. So Joel thinks she's going to turn. Tess doesn't think so. Joel wants to go sneak her back into the QZ and find a way to get another battery. Tess says, Joel says, you keep talking about this kid like she's got a life in front of her. And then she comes back in. They're eating. Joel and Tess are eating like some kind of bark or jerky. And Ellie pulls out a chicken sandwich. And then take note of that chicken sandwich. It's a sandwich. There's bread. There's flour. She's immune, so it doesn't matter if she eats that chicken sandwich. And I don't know if that still applies now, you know, as far as the infection, you know, is mm-hmm. concerned. But then she says, you know, Tess asks, is that chicken? And Ellie says, yes, Marlene got it from smugglers. And she's like, I guess not you guys. And they ask, why are you so important to Marlene? If you don't tell us, we'll take you back. And then Ellie says, if you take me back, you can't get that battery. And Tess is like, oh, you heard that? And she's like, I guess you didn't hear that Joel wants to shoot you. And this is one of my favorite parts. And this is kind of like, I want everybody to pay attention to this part of this scene, because it's going to come back to us towards the end of the first season. So basically Tess says, this isn't word for word, but she says, I'm going to talk to you like an adult. Joel and I aren't good people. We're doing this for us. And you find out that so tell us. And Ellie's like, oh my God, Marlene told me not to tell anybody. And the first people I run into, I'm going to spill the beans. So basically there's a Firefly camp, base camp out west with doctors, and Ellie might be the cure. And Joel's like, oh, I heard that a million times. This isn't going to end well, Tess. We need to go back. Tess is just like, we need to finish this because we get what we want, whether she is or isn't. Joel says, okay. Ellie asks, can I have a gun? And they say, absolutely not. And she says, okay, Jesus, I'll throw a fucking sandwich at him. And then they walk out, they go out. And when they open up that door, we find out that that's a Supercuts and they're in a beauty salon. And that's also, there's themes attached to that too. But when they open the door, I feel like I hear a clicker. I feel like that's a clicker noise, but I don't. Some people have said that on YouTube, and I initially, just being a person who's played the game, it sounded like a clicker, and it sounded like that shit when we actually see him for the first time in the show. Your thoughts on this, Veronica?
Yeah, I did not notice the clicker sound. So it's like a subtle kind of audio foreshadowing. It's like a, oh.
Yeah. Stuff like that.
Right. I mean, I'm looking at it and it says birds chirping. And the thing is, like, when you first, if you don't know the clickers, when you first hear it, it sounds like maybe it's a bird.
Yeah.
So there is like this thing about nature and, right. You know, I think the creators are all thinking about like what would happen in the absence of humans if the world returned to nature. So there is like this bit about like nature isn't always idyllic and beautiful. Like we see when Ellie wakes up, sometimes it's very scary. And I don't know. I think that kind of like slippage is something they're playing with maybe.
Yeah, maybe so. I mean, I don't know, but it sure did sound like one. But I really appreciate the fact that, like, you know that after this scene, like, yo, me, Joel and I are not good people. And I think that needs to be made known when people start to get on their high horses towards the end of the... I don't know how much we're going to get it, but I think we're going to try to get people to be... that are going to be sanctimonious about Joel's actions at the end of this show, at the end of the season. Anyway, so they step out into the daylight. Ellie is asked, is this where they bombed? Tess says, yes, they bombed the major cities to cut down the outbreak. It worked in some places, but not in all. And so this was interesting to me because it made me realize, it made me think about the times when I was playing the game where stuff would just be bombed. It looked bombed out, but you wouldn't think that stuff would decay like that because you still see growth. You still see animals. You still see like flora and stuff like flora and fauna growing and everything like that. Because there's been times where you'd be at a location in the game and something would look bombed out. And that cold open, and then Tess's explanation is sort of like, oh, that's why I saw shit like that. That's why these buildings are like caved in and everything. So that was pretty neat. That's just a small thing, but it still like cleared up a lot for me. Cause you have to traverse over all these different landscapes.
That's also reminiscent, you know, we'll get to it a bit maybe in the next scene, but Chernobyl, you know, how in Craig Mazin's the site is like a return to nature too.
Yeah.
So anyway.
I think it might be Mazin. Did I say Mazin before? Anyway, I think it's Craig Mazin.
There we go.
But we love you, Craig. And she says it worked in some places, not at all. And then they say, oh, the long way or the short way to the state house. Tess says the long way or we're fucked or we're fucking dead way. That's the short way is they're fucking dead. So they have to check their route from the hotel first. And they're walking and there's this brief shot of them walking by this plush giraffe toy. Which alludes to possibly one of the most beautiful moments in video game history. I think it's Neil Druckmann directed it. So I think maybe they're going to do it on the show too, towards the end of the season. So Tess asks how Ellie got bit. Ellie says, I got bit at the mall in the QZ. And she's like, the one where no one's supposed to go, where it's all, you know, you're not supposed to even go there. And she says, were you by yourself? Ellie says, yes. That's a fucking lie. She was not. She was with a character that we'll meet later. That they made a whole DLC about in the video game. Tess says, well, you got some balls on you, sister. And Ellie says, thanks. And she smiles. She asks, is anyone coming after you, like a mom, dad, or a boyfriend? Ellie says, no, I'm an orphan. And no, like no boy is coming after her. Because she's good. Everyone says that the open city was crazy with swarms of infected everywhere. This is what Ellie says. Joel says, no, not exactly like that. Tess says, people like to tell stories. Ellie says, so there aren't any infected that explode fungus spores on you? Tess says, shit, I hope not. Or ones with split open heads that see in the dark like bats. And then Joel and Tess looks back at Joel and Joel's like, ooh, you know, he doesn't say anything, but they're clearly they don't want to scare her. And right after you hear them say that, you hear the scream of a clicker. And
yeah, they probably could have told her then. They probably could have told her that's true.
Yeah,
that would have been a good idea.
So they're basically talking about the evolution of the infected. So the big one is the bloater, which you would see in one of the trailers that they put out, which is going to be it looks amazing. So you'll meet that. We'll meet a bloater later, but the clickers are the main attraction of this episode. And you hear them off in the distance. And Ellie asks, what was that? And Joel says, let's keep moving. So they get to the next. Okay, we could break. What are your thoughts on this? The walk and talk.
Well, the walk and talk. Okay, so we're not in the. Not in the hotel yet. That significant moment. I was wondering if that was in the video game. No boyfriend. And then the kind of reaction. That's one of the meme moments of this episode is her silence to that. That significant silence. That's in the walk and talk.
That wasn't in the video game. She doesn't say anything about. I think we know when she doesn't have any parents because she's in that. She's just a child of her mother's dead. You find
right.
We'll see that later, but we don't know anything about her dad. Maybe we'll find out in the show.
We know through her conversations with Marlene, but not with not with Joel and Tess yet.
Right. Joel and Tess don't know. So we get to the hotel. There's a shot of some ducks in the flooded hotel. There's even a frog that's on a piano. And when the frog jumps on the piano, you hear like he makes when he jumps on a particular key, it makes it sound like a horror movie when the frog jumps.
It was nice.
Yeah.
Chef's kiss. It's a nice
Nice job, Neil. And then Ellie asks if they've ever stayed in a place like this, which this hotel was like a luxury hotel. And Tess says a little out of our league. And Joel asks, how do you know about a place like this? Ellie says, you never heard of books being a smart ass. So they got to cross the flooded lobby to get to the stairwell on the other side. Ellie says she can't swim. And Joel says, seriously? Ellie's like, you think they have swimming pools in the QZ? And Joel said, no, smart ass, you know. So this is where this little sequence is where I was like, oh, shit, she's doing this, too. So Ellie, this is in the video. This is kind of like in the video game. Ellie goes to the front desk and she starts playing around. And says, yes, sir, I would like your finest suite, please. And she plays the bellhop. Yes, ma'am. Would you like me to take your luggage? And Joel says, oh, you're a weird kid. And Ellie says, you're a weird kid. Then she pushes the the luggage cart. And it reveals a skeleton falls out from the other side. And she gets freaked out and trips. And Joel picks her up. And then she gets up and he kind of jerks away from her because he doesn't want to, like, you know, have any feelings for her, fatherly feelings, to be clear.
I think he's also, you know, not sure she's not infected.
Right. That too. Great point. I really like this scene. I love Bella Ramsey being playful like that, because that's who Ellie in the game is, very playful. One thing, though, this is not in, they're not in a hotel in the video game. They don't get to the hotel until they get to Pittsburgh. So this was a change. Like, so we'll talk about it a little later, maybe. But they're doing this to check out how they're going to get to the state house. So what did you think about this little sequence here?
Yeah, this is exciting because it showed, you know, in the first episode, I didn't like the kind of backlot look of some of those scenes. And this scene is so rich. like it seems like on the other side of the QZ, the creators are just really interested in what it would look like in a world that's taken over back by nature. That humans have ceded their control and lost authority. And so what would that look like? And it seems like there's a lot of imagination and creativity at play in imagining that world. So the hotel was great. It was really interesting. I loved the ducks and the frog. So that was exciting. This was a good episode for set design and for imaginatively thinking about solutions that were marrying the story with the set.
Yeah, that's a great point, Veronica, because it's like the world's taken over again. Like the world has taken back the night. I don't know. Yeah. It's just taken back everything. And it's like you can see how it's bigger than us, you know? Because you will really see that. And it's just like, I don't know, just as someone who's played the game, and as dark as things can get, it's one of the most beautiful video games I've ever played in my life. Yeah. Despite the subject matter, just the way that things look. And it's like you still see all this lush greenery, but this horrible shit is going on.
Right.
And it's just from a, I don't know, just from that level, it's beautiful, but it's also very violent. So they climb up to this stairwell on the other side. Tess complains about getting up the stairs. She's like, Ellie's like, oh, it wasn't that bad. Tess says, you try climbing up the stairs with our knees, you know, and they find their normal passages that has been blocked off due to the floor collapsing above them. And Ellie says, you know, I'm small enough to climb through, but Tess says that if you die, we get nothing. So Joel helps Tess up through the opening. And that's a normal thing that happens in the video game where she'll say, help me up, Texas. And he'll, like, you press a button and they'll do the motion of him pushing her up. And that's a constant thing that happens. And that, I really like that. I don't know if you'd call that fan service, but I just thought it was like, well, it's like a nerd, you know, like the Leonardo DiCaprio meme, like, oh, they do that in the game. You know, I just thought that was, I like that touch because that does happen in the game. So she says, she's up there and she says, there's a bit of a mess. So I'm going to need a few minutes. So this is where Joel and Ellie talk, getting to know you. Joel and Ellie, they spend some quality time together. Ellie starts flipping her knife around. Joel says, nice knife. Where'd you learn to do that? Ellie says, the circus. And then she asks, where are you from? He says, Texas. Where's Tess from? Detroit. It's in Michigan. And she says, I know. I go to school. I know where Detroit is. And she says, are you two like, Joe says, pass. How'd you end up in Boston? Joe says, pass. No more questions about me. And then she asks, how long do the infected live? And Joel says, oh, I thought you went to school. And she says, it's a real shitty one. And so he tells her, some have been around for a month or two, some last for a month or two, others have been around walking for 20 years. Has he ever killed an infected? Joel says, lots of them. Is it hard to kill him? He says, sometimes. And then she says, what about the guy from last night? And then they conveniently get interrupted by Tess, who's found a path for them. I also forgot to mention that Joel got a hairline fracture for beating the shit out of that guard. Mm-hmm. He mentioned that in that first scene that they're in as they're watching Ellie sleep. Do you want to push a little far?
Sure.
Let's just do this. No, let's do this. I want your thoughts on this, that sequence there.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a natural chemistry, obviously, between Ellie and Joel at this point.
You said there is or not? There isn't.
Is not. No. Or not, you know, like he's off puttish. Tess has given her more reason to trust her, at least shows that, you know, she's concerned with her well-being, even if it is self-serving. you know, that their rapport. Go ahead.
You don't even think him beating the shit out of the, killing that guard with his bare hands?
Nah.
Is not a, no. The way she looked at him, no, when he did it, all that time we spent talking about that and them on the podcast saying, oh my God, it looked, the way that she looked when he beat the shit out of that guy.
Yeah, I think that there's a, okay, so there's like a thing of that's there, which mm-hmm. is like in crisis, they may have a connection, but that doesn't sustain like a kind of, it's not, it's obviously not the same as his interactions with his daughter in the first episode, right?
Fair enough.
And there's not even an easy, you know, he's not going to talk much. He's going to pass on all her questions. He's, and Tess is just a lot more open to responding to Ellie's inquisitiveness, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I there was also the sense, I don't remember if it was in the official podcast, but they were also saying like, oh, now I got to talk to this guy. This guy kind of sucks. You know, I think that you could have someone be happy to be around someone as a protector and then also still not know, still kind of have to suffer through a conversation with them. And it definitely felt like they were suffering through a conversation.
Oh, sure. The jury's still out. I just pushed back a little to see what you thought.
Yeah. But it's exciting to see them start to connect. I think I'm impressed with Pedro Pascal's performance so far. He's really good. And so even here, there's a lot.
I've never had a problem with him. I've not seen him in Game of Thrones. I've not seen Narcos.
Very different character in Game of Thrones. But yeah.
But and I was like, man, he's nailing Joel. And I think I said the same thing. You know, like you could almost compare this. I'm just saying as far, I think I might have said this in our first episode where I knew he was locked in when I heard him on the trailer talking like Joel, you know, mm-hmm. and I was like, okay, this is real, the real deal. And I've always liked his other work, even when he was in stuff that wasn't that great, like that Wonder Woman 1984. All right.
Sure.
Okay. All right, so they get up to the museum, and the view.
Oh, not that view. Another view.
Tess found a path to them. They're on the roof of the hotel, and they look below, and they see a bunch of infected on the other side, at the bottom on the other side, which they're blocking their path.
This was very cool.
Yeah.
That shot.
Yeah, and it shows that. The infected, Tess basically says the infected are connected. The fungus grows underground, long fibers like wires stretching over a mile. You step on a patch of cordyceps in one place, you can awaken a dozen in another place. Now they know where you are and they come. You're not immune from being ripped apart. You know, she's like, you got to know this because I want you to, I'm trying to keep you alive. And so they have to go the short way through the museum. And they walked into the museum. And they walk to the museum. They know that there's a way across from the top floor because they've gone that route before. There's fungus all over the building like ivy. Joel checks it out. He checks it out with his gun. He says it's bone dry, which means that they could all be dead. Tess warns Ellie if they come across something to get behind them. And they start pulling out their guns and flashlights. Ellie says, you know, I have a spare hand for a gun. Joel says, congratulations. That's why I push back because their chemistry, like as actors, is working, even though they're not like together.
Oh, no.
I initially heard the acting thing. Other than like the actual relationship,
I see
that's blossoming in the show. So that's why
I was like, I got it.
I know it, and I know what you meant after you explained. Yeah. So
yeah,
this is a little sequence, but this is an extension of what the doctor says in the cold open. Like this is how it is. Like they're connected. This is exposition. That like tells you what's going on. because we didn't know any of this in the game. We just knew that these folks are infected and they'll kill you. Get away from them. Yeah. Shoot them.
Yeah. Right. I was just going to say that the mycelium thing about like the underground mushroom network of communication is just really cool. And then even the exposition, it's totally exposition. You're right. But that last scene where they like show the infected and they're all kind of like grappling on top of each other, just the way they moved was like so creepy and so effective. In that scene where Tess is explaining to Ellie what the mycelium is. So that was just really a nice setup in a way that was exposition accompanied and illustrated with like, is a sight far of the infected that really kind of prepares you for these kinds of strangeness of these creatures.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really like, I was like, oh shit. Because in the game that you have to, well, we'll get to that in a bit. So they go into the museum and they find a dead body. I'm thinking when I saw that, maybe a clicker killed him. And the guy, they said somewhat, some people were saying it was a soldier, but it looked like he didn't have on any, like he didn't have on a uniform to me. It looked like he just had a sweater on.
Yeah. I was hoping you would explain this, Chris, because I didn't know what the hell was happening here.
I think it was,
he's got blood and he looks bloodied, but he's like a guy that looks like a firefly guy with the sweater and a denim shirt underneath or something. And it's fresh blood. I guess that's the weird thing, because everything else in the museum is quite expired, dead, like been dead for a long time.
Yeah.
But I didn't really understand what was going on here.
I think the thing about this was just like that. Just maybe that was just somebody kind of like that kid in the first episode, where it was maybe it didn't seem like that was a guard to me or a firefly. Guy. It would probably be a firefly than a like you said. I think it was somebody walking around and the clicker got to him.
So you think a clicker did that? So a clicker wouldn't like...
They'll rip you apart. Like they will like, well, yeah, they'll bite you and yeah, they'll just really fuck you up. But they've never seen... And Ellie even said, because there are no... I don't want to jump... Well, Ellie didn't get bit by a clicker. Ellie's never seen a clicker before until a few minutes this episode. Later.
Yeah.
So we've never seen it. As viewers, we haven't seen it yet. So the way that a clicker can fuck you up is kind of like how that guy got fucked up. You know what I mean?
Because he also doesn't look that fucked up. I mean, he looks kind of like there was an injury to his head that we kind of can't see. There's like a scratch, but it's not like... he's completely torn apart or his face is completely open or anything like that. So I was a little confused as a, someone unfamiliar with the game and what a clicker's attack would look like. Yeah. A little confused by that, but maybe I think you're right. It's supposed to be the victim of a clicker.
Yeah, and maybe.
Foreshadowing.
Yeah. Because that's all that's in that we see in the museum. And it's all, but then you see the different types that are in that horde. So he got dealt with by an infected. I can go to the bank and say an infected got him.
Yeah.
And they're kind of just saying, well, what if he went in? And they were just trying to figure out what did him in. And they didn't want to immediately go to, a infected got him,
Yeah.
So they go. So Joel says, from this point on, we are silent, and they slowly walk up the stairs, and everything's kind of creaking because it's an old building. Ellie steps on a decomposed hand. They get to the top of the floor. The beam behind them collapses. That happens in the game. And it's just like the path. That's basically just signifying a point of no return. And it summons a clicker, and Joel mouths to them, to Ellie, really, they can't see, but they can hear. And Ellie's looking, and you see this clicker and come around the corner, Ellie can't hold in her gasp. The clicker immediately turns around and attacks them, knocks them down. Joel shoots it and tries to grab him. Another one chases after Tess and Ellie. Tess shoots at it. They run. They fall over a mannequin or statue. There's a great shot of Joel loading his gun in the foreground, and the clicker tries to find him in the background of the shot. And Joel loading his gun, even that smallest sound draws the clicker up to him, and the clicker can hear that. And the camera just lingers on Joel. And then by the time the camera lets you see that clicker up close. And then it hears another sound. It turns away and walks towards Ellie, who's hiding on the other side of the room, which is kind of like that in the video game. The sequence that I'm talking about is essentially in the game. So they try to sneak behind to go around it, but Joel steps on some glass and the clicker lunges on him and Ellie. They don't even do that in the game. They will go for you, but they mainly just walk to, you know, run to you as soon as they hear that sound. Which was, anyway, we'll get to that. They try to push him off. Joel shoots it twice. It falls back, gets up and lunges towards him again. Joel shoots it four times and kills it. I think he's got a revolver. I think that's a six shooter, because I think that was six shots, two initial shots, four that end up killing it. He's out of bullets, so you know he's out of bullets. And another one attacks them. Tess hits it in the head with an axe. Joel picks up that machine gun and shoots it in the head and kills it. Joel asks Tess if she's all right. She says, I got a twisted ankle, but it's okay. Tess asks Ellie if she's okay. She says, well, I didn't shit my pants. And Ellie looks at her arm and says, and she's been bitten again. And she says, if it's going to happen to one of us, Tess says, let's get the fuck out of here. They make way to the roof. Joel gives Ellie a bandage. And that's like in the video game, like when you want to get healed up, you have a medicine kit that you find. And you can like bandage yourself up to replenish your health. And then she crosses this makeshift wooden bridge. And Joel says, it could be scary. She's like, no, that was scary. This is wood. And she just walks across the little makeshift bridge. Joel bandages up Tess's ankle. Joel says they're probably more infected ahead. Joel's concerned about Ellie's second bike. Tess brushes him off about tending to her anxious. Don't worry about that. She asks him to just take the good news and maybe once think that we can win. And she tells him to go watch Ellie. And this is kind of like the video game where we, you know, it's, well, I'm not going to say anything. Joel asks Ellie if, so it cut to Joel and Ellie looking at the state house. Off in the distance, Joel asks Ellie if it's everything she hoped she's hoped for. Ellie says, jury's still out, but man, you can't deny that view. That's directly taken from the video game. Tess tells him to go. Let's go before it gets dark. They head down. Joel looks at his broken watch, thinking about Sarah, and then he heads down and they head to the state house. What did you think of this sequence, Veronica?
Yeah, it's the exciting sequence of the episode, right? It's almost like it's the gem in the episode, those scenes in the museum. It's really exciting to imagine what's in store for how the clickers communicate like bats with one another. So if you get swarmed by a few, are they going to be able to communicate with as much sophistication as like the mycelium allows for fungi to communicate? So that's exciting. Yeah, I had some questions about like, okay, do the clickers then not have the tendrils that come out of their mouths and have an attack that way?
They do, but it's like because of the fungal growth, like it's kind of split their brains. Like it's kind of split and they can't see.
Right.
So that like their brain and they can't see, but they have to have the mouth so the tendrils can come out. At least for the for the purpose of the show
transmission,
the transmission and all that. Like in the game, like reason why, one of the reasons why the show is called Brickmaster is there's a sequence in the DLC where Ellie is in this competition with another character and she says she's a Brickmaster. Like the intro, that actually it's taken from the intro that we use on the pod. But yeah. You can throw bottles and bricks to distract the clickers to go in another direction while you either escape or you try to sneak attack them. So they'll go wherever the sound is. So they'll immediately go where the sound is because they can't see.
Do they communicate through clicks with one another?
That's a good question. I think maybe with this show, they probably do. But I don't know. I don't know how, like, because I think there was one, I don't know if it was on the official podcast, but they were saying how they're trying to say, like, don't think about them like being together as a unit, as a community. So I would almost, with the way that scene was explained at the top of the roof, probably.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be rational like us humans. It's not going to be like completely thought out, but it's still going to be this type of togetherness that they have with each other.
That's kind of exciting, you know, like that idea of that the mycelium, the underground network really introduces a lot of concepts that are, it's going to be interesting to see where the show develops it out or how it might be different in those ways. The scene, the visuality, like, and the ways that audio and visual are being worked with together in that scene with the flashlights and the guns does feel like very video game, you know, style of like, you know, it's would be common to like be in a darkened space in a video game within a first person shooter where you like have a source of light and a gun and you kind of other things are obscured about where, but for what you're pointing at. So that was kind of a cool like integration or nod to video game aesthetics.
Yeah.
I did know, like, it's funny because I, you know, I haven't played the video game. So when there are moments like when they came up and saw that view, Jerry's still out. When she said Jerry's still out, I knew that was from the video game, even though I didn't know it was from the video game. So I don't know what it is exactly, but there's something that's like the beats of things that are being replicated from the video game. Even that scene earlier in the flooded hotel where she does that whole thing at the bellhop desk.
Right.
It's like, oh, that's from the video game, even though I haven't seen it or played the video game. So I don't know what to do with that yet. But it does seem like, okay, there's like this deepening of their relationship of between Joel and Ellie that's happening in that moment when they see the kind of potential beauty of the city.
Oh yeah, definitely. And it's for Ellie to be out there for the first time is something too. And it's Joel's used to it and he probably doesn't give a shit. But when you can look through the eyes of somebody that hasn't seen it before, you kind of get this deeper appreciation about thing. It like this happened to be what we're talking about now is like nature and the beauty of it. That's part of him softening to her too.
Right.
Because I think they're kind of telegraphing it early. Well, they do that. That's kind of the same in the video game. But even looking at the after playing the remastered, like the PlayStation 5 version with this extremely high fidelity, the beats that these actors are playing, you can really feel what they're doing. But even just the tiniest thing that Pedro Pascal does, like when he looks, he kind of smiles, but he doesn't. When he looks at that, he looks at his watch and he's just like, it's almost like, okay, this girl is going to be the death of me. I don't know. And not even that, but no, that's too far on, but it's just like, I'm feeling something.
Right. Right. You know? I'm not sure if it's like just good. It's just a feeling something. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, so it's softening him up a lot and we'll see. There's certain moments in the game where it's like, oh, this is real now. So, okay. So they're headed to the state house. And so they're they get there. They're looking for the fireflies at the rendezvous point, at this, which is the state house. There's an empty truck with no one in it. There's a dead body by the truck. Ellie sees blood leading inside to the state house. They go inside to find a bunch of dead fireflies. Joel surmises that one of them got bit. The healthy ones fought off the sick ones. Everyone lost. Tess is frantically looking for a map or a radio. Joel says it's over. You know, let's go home. And Tess says, it's not my fucking home. I'm staying. And then she says, our luck had to run out sooner or later. And then Ellie realizes that Tess is infected. This is stripped from the video game. Joel says, show me. She shows him the bite on her neck. Tess says, oops, right? And she tells Ellie to take her bandage off. And she says, there's no infection on her. Tess is telling Joel, take her to Bill and Frank. That's not in the game. Take her to Bill and Frank. They take her off his hands. You got to set everything right. Joel, she's telling Joel, set everything right after all the stuff that they've done. An infected wakes up. Joel shoots it. Tendrils start to grow underground and whatnot, which is notifying the infected that they saw by the hotel. And Tess starts to set up a makeshift trap, spilling gasoline, throwing grenades out. To keep them from catching, to just give Joel and Ellie some time to get away. And Tess tells Joel, save who you can save. Joel drags a reluctant Ellie off. Tess tries to light the room on fire. A stalker saunters up to her and essentially makes out with her, gives her the kiss of death until spreads his tendrils inside of her. And Tess still tries to light up. She's got a lighter in her hand. She's frantically trying to, you know, make it go off, which is probably she's about to turn. So she's twitching. So it was hard for her to actually blow everything up. And Joel and Ellie escape. Everything blows up. Joel walks away. Ellie lingers looking at the building. She turns to face Joel. She essentially turns to us, the audience, and bummed out. And we get the great score from Gustavo Santaolalla. We get that great score from Gustavo, who did the score for both video games. And then we get a blackout. In the game, I think this was a good change. In the game, you get like the Fedra did this. Right. So Fedra, Mazin said on the podcast that they didn't need to be. Why would Fedra be patrolling all the way outside of the QZ? Because it's really nothing out there but infected. So Fedra kills the fireflies, and then Fedra's coming after Joel and Ellie. And that's in the video game. You're trying to escape. And you get a rifle off of a dead soldier. And that's your new power up. You get the rifle. You start killing people in the state house. And then that's how you get away. I like how they did it with just the infected, you know, adding a nice bookend to the cold open. And that's it. That's episode 2, Infected. What's your thoughts on that last sequence, Veronica?
Yeah, I thought we got to talk about the the infection via creepy makeout sesh with Tess. So, you know, this is like very different in many ways. And even with the tendrils and the kind of transmission by mouth to mouth, it's a really fascinating kind of end they give to Tess. And I think it's quite nice. I know that I would have liked more time with Anna Torv. Hopefully, maybe we'll get some Tess backstory later.
Probably. We will. I think she's going to be in the next episode.
Oh, good. So, you know, I do want to see more of her. But the kind of the way that she the way that that's played, and she even talks, Anna Torf talks about it at the end with like the behind the scenes vignette featurette after the show. It was like repulsion but attraction, and then this kind of way that it, she describes it as, she thought of it as like a magnetic connection thing. But it is really played interestingly. I'm not really sure how to feel about it. So the infected is drawn to her. And I think that there is a struggle or a battle that's going on between like Tess as the host and the parasite that's driving her to just submit. Right. So there's like terror in Tess's eyes at the same time that her body isn't retreating or moving. And I thought that that was played pretty interesting now that I talk more about it. What did you think of that moment?
You talking about this made me think about that movie with the fish guy. The Shape of Water. Like at the end where she becomes like one of like him. And it was kind of sad to me. It was still kind of creepy. Creepy.
They cut gills into her or something, right?
Yeah, it was just kind of weird. Even though she wasn't happy in her life, but it was still kind of like underwater, the bleakness of it. It was
just not quite a happy ending.
No, you just reminded me. It's like, that's not. They also said on the official podcast that they shot some scenes with Tess, showing Tess's backstory, that she was married and had a kid, and her husband and a kid got infected. She killed her husband, but couldn't bear to kill her kid. So she just locked the kid up in the basement. And so that was, Ellie was kind of like her hope, I guess, her hope of like trying to write the things that she did. She didn't, I don't think she had any control of that, of, you know, people turning and whatnot, but, the stuff that she did in the 20 years since the outbreak, I guess that weighs on her too. And it was interesting that the motivation for them to get out of the QZ, for Joel and Tess to get out of the QZ, they wanted to get out of there before they even met Ellie. They were tired of it, you know? And in the game, it's not really, that's not the motivation. The motivation for them is to get weapons so they could continue to exist in the QZ and exist with some type of prosperity, if you will. But I think this was a great episode. I really liked it. I just thought that that clicker encounter was just really like savage. It was intense. And even though I knew what was going to happen, I was still just kind of like, damn, because now from a gaming perspective, now that whole sequence doesn't happen as fast. You're going through skyscrapers and towers. It's like this underground descent. When you get in this subway and you have another encounter with some clickers in a subway, that's really scary and really like hard. And when I first played the game, in 2013, 10 years ago, I was frustrated and I cut the game off and I didn't play. I put it down for like 4 months.
Well,
and because I was so pissed off, I could have changed the level. I guess I could have made it easier, I was pissed. And it wasn't until I found out that they were going to come out with DLC that I said, let me go back to it. And I fell in love with the game, I was not mad at the fact that they took that out and we get a hotel sequence, much earlier than we do in the game. It was still, they did well with it. I wasn't mad with any of the changes.
I think and I would be curious about the sorry, Joel leaving Tess with how that plays out in the video game, because I thought it was really interestingly played here. You know, she gets this moment of strange romance with the, and it's coercive. It's a weird, very, a lot to unpack with this kiss with the stalker. But what I was noting is that, you know, once he realizes that she's infected, Joel, he doesn't touch her at all, right? There's no parting, anything. There's nothing. And it's Ellie that really wants some kind of like to save Tess. And it's impossible. You know, Joel knows that. So he hardly even like stops. She says, you know, save what you can, save who you can. And then he leaves immediately, right? There's no like, there's no hug. There's no air kiss. There's no, there's no nothing. Air kiss.
That's because he has to, that he's been, he's a grizzled, war-torn kind of guy. It's really like, and I said this when I've talked about the games in general, it's really like, I think Wikipedia called it a neo hot Western story. Like these guys are like modern day cowboys, kind of like, even though, Chris, No Country for Old Men took place in the 80s. It's like that neo cowboy type thing where these guys aren't really gonna be that expressive. Yeah. And it's not going to be, you're not going to get like somebody like me explaining his feelings and shit. You're not going to get that from him. That's that guy.
We're not going to get a distancing. What is it? What do we used to do during COVID? We'd hug ourselves. We'd hug ourselves because we can't hug each other.
Oh, you know, I never did like that. Okay.
Physical distancing thing. No, that's not what Joel's going to do.
No. And it's what's really powerful in the second game is a moment that is shared between him and Ellie. That's like, yeah, they're fucking cowboys, Ellie included. You know what I mean? And it's because of that restraint, almost like Brokeback Mountain in a lot of ways, where you're not going to get that. You're not going to get, well, I love you, even though we're the same sex, I like you and blah, 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 blah. It's that those unspoken things that kind of ring very loudly, and you really do know how people feel. So, yeah, I think this was great. I really I'm enjoying this to see how everything plays out. One thing that I wanted to ask you to see how you felt on this. I always look at life through a racial lens. I just think that's how I'm conditioned.
Yeah.
Did you feel any kind of way about the shit starting in Jakarta? Brown people, you know what I mean? Like, oh, brown people. Even though our hero, quiet as is kept, is Mexican American.
Yeah.
How did you feel about that?
Yeah. Yeah, of course, right? It's South Asia, East Asia. It's and that does play into a lot of these kinds of fears and panics that we see that happened around COVID, even right at the beginning. So totally. But at the same time, I thought it was, I don't know. It's also well written and well done. You know, is the thing. I wasn't even factoring in about the flower stuff and the grain stuff. It's like so different too, like the narrative of like how that would be the beginning of this, which is different than like the kinds of beginnings that were interpreted about COVID, where it's like, oh, what are these hazardous, you know, disgusting wet markets where pigs and bats and all these different meats can kind of commingle, like you see in that one Steven Soderbergh film. What was it that Contagion? We were watching? Contagion, right?
My man Scott Stanglin was in that. Shout out to Scott Stanglin, fellow Roosevelt University alum.
Oh, nice, yeah.
And he's going to be on Broadway again this spring.
So. Yeah, definitely. This kind of like how the national players are appear in these different narratives. Yeah, it's troubling. But I don't know. Yeah. I think that's also just kind of on par with like these kinds of virus narratives generally, right? Mm. Can we imagine one where it's not potentially racist?
I love the way you say it. Oh man, yeah.
Like I think Walking Dead, we don't really even get a clear idea of how it starts, but it's kind of located in Atlanta. Yeah, I don't know. It's really hard to find like one where it's not, the origins aren't kind of fucked up.
Yeah, I think after we get deeper into it, because there's things that there's characters that we haven't met yet that I'm kind of sensing that I'm going to be really upset after a particular episode. And I just think like as great as Naughty Dog as a studio is, as brilliant
I think
Neil Druckmann. Yeah. It's just like they've got some blind spots.
Oh, for sure. And we'll see how it kind of we will see if they change those kinds of things, because I'm sure they're aware of them, of those critiques that are, right?
Aren't yeah. they? I don't yeah. know if they might be, but like the thing that comes from these games, especially with part two, it was just about, gay characters and there's a trans character and the character that they thought was trans wasn't trans. It's like stuff like that. But then I'm like, what about this racial element where all the brown and other people that are others get killed?
Right.
Yeah. It's just like, and I'm just kind of like, man, I got like y'all are great. I got to see somewhere like somebody of color, like when the credits roll, is alive.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And so we'll see if they make those kinds of adjustments with the show.
I want to see what we kind of touched on this last week, but it's like the only saving grace is that racially is that our main character is Mexican.
You mean Joel?
Joel.
I mean, it's coded though. It's not, you know, it's
because it's his really brother, because that's what us. That's why I want you to, I mean, I'm not trying to get you to unpack it right now.
Yeah. But
because Tommy is clearly.
Yeah. No, they are, but they aren't. Right.
I mean,
I think there's a proximity to whiteness that makes it so that it goes unstated. It can go unstated. Mm-hmm. We'll see how it comes up when we meet Sarah's mother, what kinds of things come up there.
If we meet her.
Right. Right.
Because it's like,
which I'm assuming we do, no?
I mean, I can't say that it's canon because we haven't met her in the game.
Oh,
it doesn't mean we won't meet her you know, on the show, but it's like they got married young and in the game, he's like 33 when you meet him. So he's like 14 minus 33, what? 17, 18? What is that?
Oh, sorry. I was
How
blanking.
Old are you? If he's 33 at the beginning of the game, Sarah's like 14. There's a teenager.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But like, I'm just going to assume that because Tommy... Gabriel Luna is Mexican. Then
yeah, but it just might not go mentioned. I mean, the thing is,
fine, but you and I see that shit. As people of color, we see that this motherfucker is Mexican.
Yeah.
They clearly made that distinction. Whether or not how Joel talks, because I met Mexican people like that, and I guess if we ever get Randolph Terrence on the show, he can talk about that because he's lived in Texas. He's seen guys. I've worked with comics that are like that, if they're conservative or whatever.
I mean, I'm descended from Texans of the Tejanos.
Right.
I think that there's a really complicated connection with whiteness.
Sure.
Specifically in that state. So, you know, I think, I don't know if it's going to deal with those at all.
Oh, I don't think it is.
But it might just be the same thing as like how Texan Tejano identity in the ways that you're describing just takes for granted that, yeah, I'm like a white person, like a George Zimmerman type, even though he's Peruvian.
Exactly.
You know, where it's just like white supremacy. But, you know, like, I don't know. We'll have to see.
Because I haven't said, and we'll wrap it up soon. But I haven't said that I don't even know if Joel would vote. Would Joel vote for Trump?
Right. Right.
That's what I'm like. I said that before. Yeah. Before this shit even happened, before I knew there was going to be a show, I found that fascinating. Like, would he vote for Trump? He's in Austin. It's a little progressive, but maybe, you know. But I just think the fact that he exists as a guy who looks like Pedro Pascal and has a brother that it looks like, you know, Gabriel and Luna, I'm like, I see it.
Yes.
And I like it. I want people to know. Like, I'm just like, yo, that's dope to me. Whether they address it or they don't, the casting decisions have been made.
What I'm saying is I see it too.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that it's actually it's kind of throughout our history. So this idea that we have like that kind of representation would be something to remark upon or something different. Mm-hmm. When we see like in earlier historical periods, there was presence of Mexican or Mexican-American, Latinidad. I mean, the other thing is that, you know, Pedro Pascal is not Mexican, the actor, he's Chilean. So right. It's like, you know, there's like all these and there's what's common is potentially like whiteness. And are they just going to kind of default to that? Potentially. And so this thing of it's like a question also of like representation, too. Right.
Right.
Like, are we going to have more black characters that just get killed? Are we just going to have Sarah and she's going to be black, but she'll get killed? So, you know, I mean, it's a thing of like, okay, there might be more representation, but is it actually doing anything to change the script of what's been the racial scripts that are already there?
Oh yeah, like because I think that's why I wanted to talk to you about this, because when I was a kid, I came up doing theater. We were doing like Rodgers and Hammerstein. We were doing The King and I. We did The Sound of Music, and I played Max, the guy who gets the Von Trapps away from the Germans. I'm a 14-year-old black kid getting these white kids out of Germany. Like, that's not lost upon anything. And one of the reasons that inspired me to go down the path that I went is because my parents moved me out of a predominantly black Catholic school in Washington, D.C. And they moved me to this other school that was mostly white. And we had kids from different cultures, but it was white. And I was definitely a minority there. I knew who I was there. And for the black parents to see me in that role, in that play, my dad brought this up. The guy who wanted me to play football, my late great dad, he said, those black parents were proud of you. Mm-hmm. In a way that they weren't when they saw me play baseball and basketball, because I wasn't that good. You know what I mean? So that kind of stuck with me. And just being there, just portraying that role, that colorblind casting that you have in elementary school and in college, it's like once you leave those doors of those schools, those institutions, it's not like that anymore. You're black.
Right.
Unless you do this all black production of Death of a Salesman that JL and I went to see. It's a shout out to JL Covan. It's different. There's things, elements that are really different, and you don't have to change the script. But for the most part, when you go out there to try to get cast in something, this guy is black, this guy is this, and this is who this person is. This guy is Mexican. I need a Mexican guy for this. Yeah, we'll say colorblind casting.
Yeah.
But we'll say like it doesn't, any ethnicity is available for this role. But for the most part, it's like when I got out of school, you either in this black play or you in this black role in this play. So that to me, because there could be a Chilean kid, a brown kid looking at this show. It's like, I want to be like Joel. I can be like Pedro Pascal. I want to be cool like him because he's a person of color. He's like, he looks like my uncle. He looks like my dad. Tommy looks like, and you'll see more of Tommy later on, but it's like, that guy's fucking cool. You know what I'm saying? It matters. Do we want to see more? Do we want to see it like enriched? Of course we do. But for now, it's like, that shit, I fuck with it.
Yeah. No, and it's interesting because it opens up conversations like this one to be had that otherwise wouldn't be. But, you know, it's also like you think back to like 1968, George Romero's Night of the Living Dead, Dwayne Jones stepping into a role that was written for a white man, you know, like, and so, you know, it's interesting. I think that what I'm trying to push on that might be beyond, like, besides this conversation is that there's like tricky things that are happening with whiteness and Latinx identities. That is like, you know, it can have its cake and eat it too a bit. Like it's like, okay, it's representing these identities, but the white person in Texas might be attuned to that kind of, but the white person in like another state might not. Oh, this is just a, you know, this person's race is not remarked upon, so they must just be like a darker skinned white person potentially. Maybe they're Italian, you know. You know, like it can have its both ways thing. And that's what I come back to when we've been talking about this, where I've been like struggling myself and calling myself like a white woman of color, because it's like it's complicated, because that's maybe what I'm talking about, is that it's able to have the representation for those that can see it and get congratulated for it. And at the same time, be able to like not remark upon and not do it at all. And it's just like, oh, well, those people are just white, you know, and that can happen more with Latinx characters. And even like in the choice of Sarah, who's like, you know,
biracial,
interracial, has a sort of like, you know, is red as black, but also has like a sort of mixed race identity that can complicate things, right? So I don't know. It's like it's a bit of like post-race Obama era type stuff that's going on. And we need to see where it goes. I think it's important that it's still like, it is exciting that it's still opening up those conversations. And you know, just like that whole thing about like, okay, but it's a Chilean white kid though. I don't know. It's like that there's still a lot of representation of whiteness all over, and in the mainstream Chilean or in the mainstream Spanish language media, it's still mostly white. So I don't know. It's like it's a bit of both. You know what I mean?
Of course, there's that. Yeah. Like I don't know. I was thinking like, because when the show first came out and you see who they're casting, and I was just like, Joel should be white. I remember joking with someone.
Your white Texan knee-jerk reaction.
Yeah. But it was like, as soon as I saw him, like, in the trailer, I was like, oh, okay. All right. That's Joel.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's why I love talking to you about this stuff. And not just like, oh, what happened in the show? Did this dude, blah, 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 blah. Always love to hear your perspective. But to try to go a little deeper on some of these things is... why I enjoy our conversations.
Well, thank you, Chris. Me too. Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how it continues, how they deal with these issues that are more a little bit more concrete. Mm-hmm. You know, like, are they going to kill off the black characters, replicate the same kinds of things that the video game did, or are they going to do something different? We'll see.
Yeah. Well, what do you guys think? Message us, hit us up on Twitter. It's in the show notes. You can email the podcast at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. This show is under the Mundane Festival podcast feed. So you can hit us up and let us know. We'll talk about it on the show. Thank you everybody for listening. We really appreciate it. And we will talk to you next time. Take it easy, folks.
See ya.